This is Troy Wagner.
This is Eric Miller.
We are
Ravers for Recovery.
And if you're listening to this,
so are you.
How was your day?
How was your week?
We want to hear from you. Reach out to us by email, info@raversforrecovery.org. And go ahead and connect with others in recovery by joining our Facebook page. And always stay up to date with the latest news by visiting our website, www.raversforrecovery.org.
And now, join us for this week's podcast.
On this episode of Ravers for Recovery, speaking to a very, very dear friend of mine, Jimmy Montalvo from Las Vegas, Nevada. I first met him actually at a recovery meeting while I was still using. Unfortunately, you know, even though he did believe in me and wanted me to keep coming back to the meetings and everything, I was not able to stay clean there in Las Vegas. But we have kept touch over the years, and would like to introduce all of you to Jimmy Montalvo. How are you today, Jimmy?
Hi, Troy. Thank you for the invite. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, let's see. Hey, you know, you were the one that kind of led the way with showing me that it is possible to enjoy this rave scene while staying clean and sober, you know? So, have you been to any of the meetings that they hold inside of Electric Daisy Carnival? You know, have you been to those recovery meetings inside the festival?
Well, let me start back with like when I first started raving, right?
Okay.
It was back in Sacramento, 1998. It was an event called Gigabeats, and the headliner there was DJ Dan, which is really cool because he's still spinning now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that was the first time I went to a rave, and I was offered drugs repeatedly, but I never took it. And so I was always mainly there for the music. So, when I found the Insomniac Consciousness Group, I've already been going to meetings for about 11 months. And I knew that I can go to a music festival without being under the influence of alcohol or drugs and still enjoy it, because I knew for me that it was always about the love of the music.
Yes, yeah. Definitely love the music. I love the music as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what brought you to recovery?
Well, I was raving for a few years. Back in 2016, I ended up getting arrested at EDC 2016. I was facing 4 felonies, Class A and Class B felonies. What that constitutes is mandatory minimums of 40 years and a $500,000 fine for the Class A, and I was facing a $250,000 and a 20-year for the Class B felony. And when I went to go see a lawyer after I got arrested, I took the suggestion, what he told me. He said, go to meetings, don't do drugs, and get a sheet signed. And essentially, that was the very first time. When I got arrested June 18th, 2016, and then my first recovery meeting was July 18th, a month later. I didn't know that alcohol was a drug, and I didn't realize that an hour before was going to be my last shot of Jaeger.
Hmm.
You know, but I'm clean now. The whole reason was that I came into recovery is because of that arrest, and I had that rat hole prayer in jail. And at that time, I did not believe in God, but I still spoke to him like this. I said, God, if you are real, I'll do whatever it takes. And I just left it at that. And I didn't know what that meant. And it's like the work in recovery program, it's like more will be revealed. And each day I just kept on going to meetings. And for over 3 years, I went to a meeting a day. You know, I had over 1,100 signatures on my sheet.
Wow.
And
wow.
I I found God, mm-hmm. you know, I stopped doing things my way and got that perspective that, that maybe my ways of thinking is not the only the right way.
And so really
kind of,
yeah. So it really stuck with you. You went, if I have this correct, you went first to get the paper signed, you know, but then the program started to grow on you. And it really started to change your way of thinking.
Well, see, I was going to NA, and I didn't think I had a drug problem, right? Yeah, I'm sure everybody's heard that before. Earlier, I started going to a 12-step program. I only went to one, and went to GA because I thought I had a gambling problem.
Okay.
The reason why I went to GA is because the girl I was seeing right then and there, she said that she didn't want to date somebody who has a gambling problem, right? So I went to this GA meeting, and mind you, that night I just sold an ounce of coke, and I spent it all on the machine in Las Vegas at a machine at I don't know, it was a PT's or something like that, and you know, it really got to me because I just lost this rack, right? And I felt like crap, and I wanted to do something different. And I went to this recovery meeting, and I got a lot out of it for me. And then I cried and shared in the meeting. But then when they prayed out with the Lord's Prayer, I was like, F this, I'm out of here. And I never went back. And it wasn't until 9 months later when I can say it's God now. God had me arrested and said, hey, let's try this again a different way.
Right. Yeah, something, you know, I really look up to you, you know, because you have been able to change your life by still living in Las Vegas. You know, that's something that I was not able to do because, like, I first got clean in 2013 when I was arrested by SWAT, you know, for being mixed up with some guys that I never should have been mixed up with, you know. And I was arrested by SWAT, served 6 months in county jail, got out and had to get my paper signed, everything like that. And later, probably about 3.5 years later, I returned back to Las Vegas and continued my probation there. And then once I completed my probation, a week later, I had relapsed. I don't know if that's because I lived in Las Vegas or because I was working in the nightlife scene and I was on the strip each and every night. Because I did promotions there. I think, I'm not sure if you still work at Nacho Daddy. But I don't know what it was. But I was never able to stay clean there. You know, I relapsed off and on. Because I moved to Vegas, then I moved out. And yeah, I really look up to you because you are able to stay clean and sober and in recovery while living in Las Vegas. How do you do it? You know?
Well, it definitely goes back to living the program one day at a time. In the first 6 months of my recovery, I went to like 140 meetings. And in that time, I didn't think I was an addict because the whole thing was like, oh, I'm not a drug addict. But when you work, I don't represent the NA program, but the NA program has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. But it's actually opened up my mind. It's about the addiction, not the substance, because I can get addicted to video games or to porn or to anything else that would substitute the way that I feel about life, you know, that just to have that escape. But being open-minded, getting outside myself and taking suggestion, like they say in the literature, to not go by your first instinct, you know, and getting that split second. Like I use the steps as like, it's a stop sign. It's like step one, you're powerless. So it's like, hold up, what's going on here? You know, is that either this is my will or this is God's will, right? Because if it's in my will, I'll always, like, you know, suffer the negative consequences. But if I'm acting in God's will, most likely I'm acting in and having good consequences out of that. But being able to be open-minded, get outside myself, take that suggestion, and use the principle of a caring and loving God, that has kept me centered and tried to keep me present. Because what I realized is, like, if I dwell in the past, you know, I'm living in a memory, or if I'm, you know, tripping about the future, then I'm tripping about an imagination, right? Mm-hmm. So in order for me to be present, like you and I, we're talking right now, this is the present, this is the moment, this is what we're going to, you know, cherish and move on, because we can change from where we've been, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it starts just for today, you know? Do something positive for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, what are, besides the meetings, the recovery meetings, what are some of those other positive things that you have been doing, to stay in recovery, to stay with that recovery mindset?
Well, in the process of this recovery, Nevada started, there's this foundation out here called Foundation for Recovery, and they have something called Recovery Pack. So it's outside NA, but it's still recovery related, where we go out and endorse political candidates that, you know, endorse the platform for recovery. It's nonpartisan. It could be Republican, it could be Democrat, it could be independent. But we endorse them based off the fact that we realize that addiction is a mental disease, and it's not, you know, something that you should be put behind bars for. And we're just trying to get the right people in office that kind of mitigate that for the people who are living in recovery, because not everybody wants to be known that they are working in recovery. But at the same time, it's important for the public to know that there are people who do recover and work an active program, and that we can be law-abiding and contributing members of society. And that's one of the aspects.
And what is that program named again?
Well, it's called Foundation for Recovery.
Foundation
for Recovery. I'm sure you can put FFR. There's a lot of meetings at the rooms there. But one of the things that Foundation for Recovery has given through Recovery Pack is that I went to this thing called A Hope for Prisoners Graduation.
Yep. John Ponder.
Okay. Yes, John Ponder.
And Daryl, his brother Daryl as well. Yep.
So I was able to go to a graduation. And if you've never been to, or if you don't know what Hope for Prisoners is, Hope for Prisoners is a work program where ex-offenders get a second chance at living at least a middle-class life, right? It's an 18-month program where they're hooked up with a mentor and to guide them through goals and to achieve what they want in life. You know, there's something called a vivid vision, where the ex-offender writes down where they want to be in a year. And we try to do everything we can in order to get to that point encouraging them and loving them that way, and getting the information and the help that they need in order to achieve these goals. And if it wasn't through recovery, going to that.
I was going to say, that's so amazing that you went through that program and that you stuck with that program. You know, I actually did go through the week-long program, Hope for Prisoners. It was, I believe, in September of 2017, I believe. And I went through the week-long program, great speakers come in. You know, there were about 30 people in our class. I don't know. I didn't stick with it. I didn't get the mentor. I didn't do any of that. What I did to actually was I met a girl in that program, and we went out to a concert at daylight at the Mandalay Bay, and we just started partying again, you know, like I knew how to make quick, fast money by doing the strip club promotions. And so maybe it was ego, or it probably was ego. That was like, hey, why do I need to find, you know, a real job when I know how to go out to the strip, make a couple hundred on this strip club? I don't need a mentor. I don't need this program. And we all know where that brought me. By leaving that program, it brought me back to addiction, and I relapsed. But yeah, you stuck with the program. Did you do it for all 18 months?
Well, overall, you know, it introduced me to that program. So in the process of me waiting for me to get a rein on my charges, right, I saw that there was a program that possibly would be for me if I had to be incarcerated. I was never on that side because I was never prosecuted, and that's the beauty about like right now. So when I got 3 years, that's the statute of limitations in Nevada. So those four felony arrests, they can't hold it against me. And it's, so what do I do now? What does Jimmy do now? Does Jimmy stop going to meetings? Does Jimmy just stop like going to church and doing all this stuff? You know, that was actually like feeding my soul, you know? It's like, no, I'm going to continue this path. And now I get an opportunity to give back and speak life into people. So I signed up for Hope for Prisoners to become a mentor, because I know how it was to be on the other side of like that worry. And it's crazy to have this faith that I have now and a belief in a higher power. And I turn everything over to him, you know? Yeah. I mean, there's still going to be part of that self-will where I want to feel different. And, you know, I suffer the consequences of that self-will. But otherwise, when it comes to, like, working a vigilant program, you know, I still have a sponsor that has a sponsor. I still work in the steps, you know. The sponsees, they come here and there. But overall, it's just being active and knowing that I have a purpose now that I can give back, not just only in my 12-step program, but for Hope for Prisoners and just my community.
That's amazing. Yeah, I didn't know if you knew that I had gone through that program as well or not. But
no, I didn't. I think I knew you were familiar with it, but I didn't know it in detail.
Yeah, has it had a lot of growth there in Las Vegas?
Oh, once again?
Has it had a lot of growth there in Las Vegas?
Growth as in like recovery wise, or?
Or no, the Hope for Prisoners program.
Oh, yeah. The program is still continuing, it's still working, it's still growing. There's still a need for mentors. Right now, there's so many jobs that are available that there's not enough ex-offenders to fill them. And I guess that's the beauty in them. I mean, considering like where we are right now with the whole pandemic. But yeah, even like President Trump was out here last month.
I saw that.
Endorsing the program and speaking. It's crazy.
I saw that.
Nevada's a cool place to be. What's that?
The thing that I like about Hope for Prisoners that I could have followed through with, but I didn't, was that, you know, the founder of it, John Ponder, that he'll go to bat for the people that go through his program. You know, he's made all those connections with the governors, with the mayor, with everyone, you know, and he'll call, what he said is that he'll call the employers and, you know, tell them that the people that have gone through his program have really changed their life. And, you know, I love that he does that. And you to be a part of that, you to be a mentor of that, is really awesome. So what do you do as far as being a mentor? What do you just talk to him? Because it's not step work in Hope for Prisoners. So what is it that you do to help them, to be a mentor to them?
So I mean, I could say the main difference between a 12-step program and working for as a mentor for hope for prisoners, you call them. Instead of having your sponsees call you, you reach out to your mentee. You want to get that face-to-face. You want to get that contact. Overall, it's a layout of try to contact them at least 3 times a week, see where they are.
Okay.
And see on ways that you can help them. Overall, it's just like project managing. You have like a main goal, and then you chop it down into something that's reasonable and attainable. And you motivate them, you encourage them, you're their cheerleader. And you hopefully find the motivation and, you know, get that face-to-face and just like know that, just tell them that everything's going to, it's going to work out if you keep on continuing to do the next right thing.
That's awesome. So, to me, I think that way would actually, I don't know if it's good to say this, but to me, I think that way would actually work better for those mentees, because it's quite difficult to pick up that 500 pound phone sometimes, you know, if you're new in recovery, it's difficult sometimes.
That is the challenge. Sometimes they don't answer the phone. I've had mentees where they, you know, they talk a good game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they have to pick up the phone on the other end and they have to do the work themselves. Just like in the 12-step program, you have to do it, the step work. If you don't do the step work, well, then what part of being a sponsee are you? You know, because it does go both ways.
Yes, yes. That's why I still, you know, I have ear clean, but I haven't been working on that, the step work and all that, even though everyone tells me that I need to do it, you know.
Hey, but you're clean, right? So you're good.
I am. I am. What has been the most challenging part of your recovery, personally?
I could say that it's still continuing to do the next right thing. I still acknowledge like there's character defects in the ways that I act out, and I'm at a process where I know better, but it's just practicing what you know. And in order for you to practice that, you know, it becomes wisdom, because we can know a lot of things, but if we just don't practice them in our daily lives, then it just, it's just telling somebody else to do something because you can see it better for them on the outside, rather than taking your own suggestion or advice. I believe that is the biggest obstacle I have, is just still wanting to do it my way.
Yeah, it's like it has to be ingrained into us, you know, and become second nature. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, for us to unlearn it, we have to learn something, and I believe through repetition is the only way that we can get to the other side.
To where
Just like, you know, the daily reading, it's just like, why do we read this all the time? Why do we read it? Because we forget. It's easy. It's easy to forget. You know, that one time that you don't act in spiritual principle, it comes to bite you in the ass, it's because you forget. You forget to practice it. You forget to apply it.
Yep.
It's so simple, but it's, you know, we're natural to rebel. You know, we like to go the other way. And right now, it's living a new way of life. It's like, all right, we've done it our ways for so long that maybe we should take the suggestion and do it the other way.
You know, it's difficult to give up that to be powerless. You know. Very difficult. So what would you like to tell anyone who is listening and currently struggling with addiction or alcoholism? What would you like to tell them to help them with their recovery?
Well, the basics is, I don't know, stop lying to yourself. You know, you can't grasp a new idea on a closed mind, right? Mm-hmm. In order to be open-minded enough, you need to be able to open enough to a different idea, a different suggestion, a different way of life. And just giving yourself a chance.
Yeah, that's something.
I would also say that, you know, find people who are clean, right? Hang out with those people. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't feel right, just keep on going, man. It's like, what I've come to believe is, like, I found that I can believe in myself, and it started with people. It started with other people believing that I can, because I didn't have any goals. I didn't have any aspirations. My goal was to die, and I was either going to die by the lifestyle, or I was going to, you know, OD over some coke. You know, it's as simple as that. I mean, for me, but it's like, just remember, it's like, you can't work your recovery program for anybody else but yourself, mm-hmm. you know, because, like, nobody's going to do you better than you. Right. So
that's what I'm,
stop lying. Yeah.
That's what I'm so grateful to you and to Pat and to each and every one of the guests that have been on this Ravers for Recovery podcast, because it's kind of, you know, showing me that, I don't want to sound selfish or self-centered by saying this, but that others believe in this vision as well, you know, and it helps me keep building that boat of recovery friends, you know, and connections with the people that are in recovery. So I, you know, I'm very, very, very grateful that we're still talking, you know, and that you are able to come on to this podcast. And, you know, I hope that we always stay in contact.
No doubt.
And yeah, just very grateful. Any last words that you would like to leave for the listeners, or go ahead and close it up?
Yeah, I'll say, Troy, I thank you for the opportunity to come out here. And, yeah, I couldn't imagine, like, 4 years ago, like, you know, here I am, like, you know, stolen dope and getting high. I never thought that I'd be actually speaking life into people now, right? Because we have an opportunity to change our lives and get a grip of it, because, you know, we might be powerless in other things, but we have a choice in this. And the biggest thing is that I didn't realize that it was my choice, because I allowed other things to dictate how I felt and what I did in life. I would say out there, give yourself a chance. There's a new way to live, and it's a life beyond your wildest dreams, and you get to stay present, and you get to love people. So I guess that's what I have.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jimmy. Again, this was Jimmy Montalvo. He is a mentor with Hope for Prisoners and a recovery warrior. So thank you again, Jimmy. You have been listening to another episode of the Ravers for Recovery podcast. I am Troy Wagner.
I'm Eric Miller.
And we are Ravers for Recovery. And if you listen to this, you are too. Go ahead and join the Facebook group, which is growing quickly. You'll find that with keyword Ravers for Recovery. Also, make sure to check out the website. A lot of cool info on there. That's at raversforrecovery.org. Until next time, again, we are Ravers for Recovery.